This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. North Carolina has become an important center in the biotech industry. Been a lot of activity recently in Research Triangle Park. Mergers, acquisitions, and initial public offerings are all creating a buzz for investors hoping to get lucky. Jason DeBruin spent 5 years covering the business of healthcare and pharmaceuticals for the Triangle Business Journal in Raleigh, so he knows just how risky these kind of investments can be and how important they are for our local economy. Jason is now WUNC's data reporter and joins us with a biotech update. Welcome back, Jason.
Hi, Frank. Good to be here.
Good to talk with you about G1 Therapeutics. Now, that'll be our kind of sample and test case. Tell us about G1 Therapeutics, what they're working on.
They are a company that spun out of UNC Lineberger, so they have deep roots here in the sort of Triangle area. They're developing a cancer treatment. It's not a drug to directly fight cancer, so to speak, but what their treatment would do is it would protect healthy cells during chemotherapy. As you know, chemo is sort of a last resort when treating cancers, but it is very effective because it's basically dumping a lot of poison into your body. And so, you know, one of the bad side effects is that, okay, it does well in killing cancer, but it also does damage to healthy cells. G1's product would essentially protect these healthy cells both in the near and long term so that then the chemotherapy can come in, kill the bad cells, and boom, then you're healthy again.
And as I understand it, it does this by sort of retarding the growth of healthy cells to keep them from being annihilated in big numbers. It holds them back while it's...
We get above my head here quite quickly, but yeah, essentially it pauses the cell development at a particular stage, and that's sort of where the name G1 actually comes from, is that it pauses in that stage. Where actually the cell is very good at defending itself.
So it's fascinating stuff, and this is the kind of medicine based on the sort of research that we've become accustomed to in North Carolina, particularly in the Triangle area, given its research institutes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're sort of seeing the natural progression of a company here, or at least one that people here would like to see. That is, NIH money comes in to UNC. A researcher by the name of Ned Sharpless sort of had this idea years ago, started working on it in a lab in UNC, was pretty successful at it, spun it out as a company. Then they raised, you know, maybe 10, 15 million from private investors. Later on down the road, raised 50 million more. And then last week, in an attempt to raise even more money, went public, raised about $105 million through an IPO, an initial public offering, and are now trading on the NASDAQ.
And tell us how that raise, that kind of, that sort of money out of the gate the minute they go public. Is that pretty good?
I mean, $100 million, you never want to frown at that. It's certainly not one of the biggest ones that we've seen, but these IPOs can range pretty widely. I mean, I'll just pick a big one, Snapchat. Company Snap went public and they raised, I think, what, $2.5 billion. Mm-hmm. Now, that's an outlier, obviously. I mean, right. I recognize that. But, you know, IPOs can even raise smaller numbers, even, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 million sometimes. It just sort of depends on how many shares the company wants to sell, how much equity it wants to give up. You know, if you are an investor in the company and you own, say, 40%, well, how much of that percentage do you want to sell off to the public markets? If you think it's going to be more valuable on down the line, you might sell off only 5 or 10%, take your 100 million, but then hold the 30% that you own because you think you can make more money on it later on down the road.
And obviously, you know, we're comparing industries, right? The biotech industry versus the social media industry. Social media, obviously international in its appeal, and it will draw money from all over the world. What about money in biotech? To what extent does it attract capital locally, and how much of it is global just like everything else?
Both. I mean, one great thing about G1 is that it does have some local investors. So there's a couple of venture capital groups, Hatteras Venture Partners, which is actually based right here. They overlook the Durham Bulls Park. And then also Eshelman Ventures. Fred Eshelman, you might recognize the name from the Eshelman School of Pharmacy. He went to UNC and sort of co-created an entire industry in some ways on pharmaceutical research. The company that he founded is called PBD. It still exists. And it contracts with pharmaceutical companies to essentially run clinical trials on their drugs. He was successful in that part of his life and has now started a venture capital group. That's one of the groups that has invested in G1. And that's where you sort of see one can be hopeful for a local geographic area because, sure, to G1, all money's green and it spends whether it comes from, you know, RTP, Boston, China, who cares? It's still good for them. But for us here locally, if G1 is successful, then that will bring a return to all investors, including right. Hatteras and Eshelman. And because they're here locally, they have a better opportunity to then take that money, reinvest it in more companies that are here locally, and hopefully start a virtuous cycle.
So it keeps some of the money here locally if they win. Also, you talk about the ecosystem that it develops. Again, we can't overlook the importance of investment in public education. That's where some of this begins, basic research. And then the ecosystem builds in a spin-off company that goes private. It makes an IPO, and now all of a sudden the money is global. But we can come back to the local economy again, and that would be local expertise. If what is spinning off of our local universities happens to be biotech, people know biotech, and they're more likely, the investors, that is to say, investment companies. And this is where, same with Silicon Valley, that kind of investment is rooted in the expertise. I know a good buy when I see one.
Sure.
And so to what extent does that play a part here locally in this economy?
Oh, no question. I mean, it's something that we've, when I was at Triangle Business Journal, you mentioned TBJ, it's something that we looked at all the time. So maybe not to beat a dead horse, but one of the concerns when GSK decided to close up its shop here, or at least the R&D facilities here, that was a concern because, you know, GSK, as being such a massive company, there's a ton of smart people that are attracted to GSK. And then, you know, if they come up with a good idea, they pitch it to GSK, say, hey, I have this idea to develop this new pharmaceutical product. It's maybe not in Glaxo's wheelhouse. So then that individual might take three or four people with him or her and start a new company. And you sort of have this, again, a virtuous cycle in a local area. You know, I should also mention the biotech center. It gets tax money. It's something that we've talked about in the past as well. They were an early investor in G1, and they've been paid back. So, you know, that's another way of sort of looking at your tax dollars at work in a local economy where, you know, your tax dollars go to the state. They see a value in investing in these biotech companies. Here's an example that can be held up as a success, at least for now.
Let's talk about some of the risks in this business in particular. G1 Therapeutics, you talked about what they're trying to develop. But it does sound pretty risky because they're putting, it seems to me, all of their investment and all their hopes in one product, right?
It's not all in one product, but it's definitely the majority in this one lead product. So they raised $100 million. They said they're going to spend about $80 million on drug development. About $45 million of that is going to go on the lead candidate. So it's definitely sort of focused on their lead candidate, the one that we talked about. But biotech investing, the biotech industry is just risky in general because at the end of the day, you still need FDA approval. And no matter how good you think something works, what kind of a great idea you think you have, if when it's tested in 1,500, 2,000 people, it shows that maybe there's side effects you didn't anticipate or, you know, B, it doesn't work as well as you thought it might and the FDA doesn't approve it, well, then you're sort of left holding the bag with nothing. And so it's definitely an industry that is, I dare say, the most risky to invest in.
Most really recently, anywhere. Sempra is a pretty good example of
that. Sempra is a good example. They're another Chapel Hill company. They had developed a pneumonia-fighting drug. I'm sure you've heard of the problem of antibiotic resistance. That's a worldwide problem. This drug that they were developing was not going to be subject to that. So it would be, you know, a potentially first of its kind, really, a new class of drug. And they had high hopes. They really showed promise in some of their early trials. And then they got to the very last step, their final FDA submission. And it showed that there were some liver risks. And the FDA said these risks are just too high. You can test it again, but they said you have to test it in 9,000 people. So that's a huge clinical trial to undertake, tens of millions of dollars that would cost. That's a perfect example of a local company.
So let's talk about how the industry is organized. I wonder if the idea is to become a big, successful company or to be good enough to get bought out. And I'm thinking of Patheon here,
yeah.
Right? Raised $600 million last year, went public, and just announced it's being acquired by Boston-based Thermo Fisher. So is this kind of the way of things in the future for
biotech?
It
does seem to happen that way where the progression is, yeah, you maybe go IPO, but then before you go through with your final FDA submission, you're acquired by a bigger company. The benefits there for the early investors in the small company is you get sort of a guaranteed return because certainly you'll be acquired for some, maybe many multiples of what was initially invested. Of course, then the bigger pharma, which has, you know, billions of dollars in cash, oftentimes these Pfizer's, GSK's have pretty big war chests. They take on the risk that perhaps you won't reach FDA clearance. And so if it fails, they're left holding the bag. But of course, if you do pass the FDA muster, then they're the ones that can distribute and sell the drug and ultimately make those profits on down the line. So that is something that we're seeing happening, though not always. Semper's a great case. They were one that was going to go alone. And sort of that's a higher risk, higher reward, because they would have made all the money if it's successful. But of course, they're left holding the entire bag when the FDA says no go.
So what other movement should we be looking at, and are we seeing in the biotech scene?
Well, you mentioned Patheon. Let me talk about them a little bit. They were acquired by Thermo Fisher, as you said. They're not a drug developer in the sense of, say, a G1, where they're focused on one drug. What they do is they work with drug companies to manufacture their products. So that includes already approved drugs that, you know, maybe you just have to run through a production line. But Patheon also specializes in early development. One of the tricks to treating people is that you need a good drug delivery system so that if you take the aspirin, it gets to the right place. That's one place where they do have an expertise that they can work with smaller companies. So anyways, that they employ about 1,900 people here in North Carolina, a lot of people in Greenville. So, that acquisition could end up being positive for us if there's continued investment here in the state.
WNC data reporter Jason DeBruin. Jason, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Always great to be here. Thanks.
You can get a link to his work at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we're going to see how some of these biotech companies are rising to the challenge, trying to create screenings and therapies for precision medicine. And we'll talk about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.